Beautiful, in this text, which we're going to turn to in a few minutes, just to give you a reference to it, it's a wonderful passage that Trangra Rinpoche has written. It's lovely. Let's see now if I can find it. Talking about why we would want to be Buddhas. Why would we want to be fully awakened beings, and or very, very advanced awake beings? Here we have it here. Oh, good. Page 61. So if you refer to this book, not right now, but if you refer to this book, The Transcending Ego, Distinguishing Conscious from Wisdom, the Third Karmapa, in Trangra Rinpoche's commentary on page 61, he talks about the power of a very, very awake being and why Buddhas manifest in different ways. And of course, we're training in that right from the very beginning. So this is because different beings approach the Dharma and causally get triggered or get interested or understand the Dharma from different points of view. So he gives an example here. Why Buddhas manifest in different ways. So for instance, some beings are very interested in the sutras, in hearing the Dharma. Others, when they see a beautiful form body of a Buddha, that really strikes them, and they're very interested in that. For instance, hearing pure, clear teachings of Dharma. He gives the example of Shakyamuni's student, Shariputra, who upon hearing one verse of the Buddha's teaching, not by even the Buddha, by somebody else, awoke to it. It's very powerful. Others, upon seeing miracles. So it could be that if your teacher levitated, or if you're in a crowd and someone passed their hand through a wall or something like that, there would be individuals go, now I want to practice the Dharma for that. You see? I want that. I want to be able to, those miracles, that's very cool. And then there's others, in the case he quotes somebody else here, Upali, who was impressed by the Buddha's perfect behavior of dressing properly, walking with discipline, and so on. An awake being, or more awake being, is able to display these different qualities of Buddha nature, the different form bodies and different qualities of Buddha nature, that will reflect onto different beings, so that beings will say, aha, that is awakeness. Aha, that speech is awakeness. Aha, that display is awakeness. And therefore, they come to the Dharma through different causes and conditions. It's very important. So we'll turn to this text, and there's some, my goodness, there's so many jewels in this book. I think we're going to have to make this a whole study at some point, this book. This is like a Abhidhamma course. This would be like a full month, because every time I open it, I realize, aha, need to explain this in the Abhidhamma, need to explain this, need to go into this. So I'm going to use this as a way of explaining the purification, if you want, of the illusory five skandhas into the primordial wisdoms. So starting on page 51, ground consciousness. Number 20, to those from third karmapa, those with superior understanding, the Buddha taught the ground consciousness. It was also named the foundation consciousness, the location consciousness, the acquiring consciousness. All the actions created by the other seven consciousnesses are accumulated distinctly and impartially within it, like rain and rivers flowing into the ocean. Therefore, it is also named the ripening consciousness. And that's a beautiful metaphor. So everything that we do or experience in the day, which is illusory, but actually has a force of intent, like mountains, let's say, in Sri Lanka, or mountains in British Columbia, or on this island, the rain washing on the rocks, the rain washing through plants, the rain touching humans and different creatures, washes different chemicals and different molecules and different elements, plastics, microplastics, which are everywhere. The average is 3,700 microplastic particles per cubic meter, I believe, is the current number in water systems. It's everywhere, just pervasive. And in the air, by the way. So you're breathing in microplastics. So am I right now. That's how pervasive it is. So all those latent dispositions, including healthful bacteria, including wonderful viruses, including all kinds of wonderful substances, are being washed through the land, into the ocean, into the lakes, through the rivers, through the clouds, and gathering in the ocean of latent dispositions, which will eventually, after some time, affect all of us. Of course, it's affecting us even today. Even the nuclear explosions of the 1950s, the open air, underground and both above ground nuclear tests are still affecting us today. There's a beautiful, I'm going to read this here. This is really wonderful. The fourth of the four conditions for perception to occur is the causal condition, or the ground consciousness. Now, when we hear the word ground, we think of it as down there. I've always felt that's a problem. Like the word subconscious. Or, you know, so you have to think of it as it's pervasive. It's not down there. It's not over here. It's through the experience of awareness. So ground has a different meaning. The ground or alaya consciousness was not mentioned in the Theravada texts, which describe only the first six consciousnesses. The seventh and eighth consciousness were not taught in the Buddha's early teachings because it could have easily have incorrectly been taken for being permanent and unique as another kind of, if you want, Atman or self. However, the ground consciousness is not permanent because its nature is emptiness. That's from the Mahamudra point of view. And is the source of all samsaric appearances. A self is considered very important and we have great attachment to it, but this isn't true for the ground consciousness. The ground consciousness has many functions, so Rangjung Dorje explains these by giving each of them names. It is called the basis consciousness because the eighth consciousness is the basis for the mind. It is called the location consciousness because it is the location of the mind. And it's called the acquisition consciousness because it acquires all the karmic latencies that are laid down every time we have activity. And then, of course, they settle in and express them at a later time. We don't know when they're going to express themselves. They'll express themselves under the right cause and conditions. As Namjoon Rinpoche used to say, under the right milieu creates the opportunity for latent predispositions, including wholesome latent predispositions. So in the same way that someone going into an environment that's very difficult One person will express terrible emotional afflictions in that challenging environment, and someone else, the greatest, warmest, most wonderful, intelligent, wise, compassionate activities will come out in a challenging environment. That's because of latent disposition. When one desires something again, this is on page 52, when one desires something again and again, the latencies of desire increase. So in other words, habituation. This process also occurs for the positive qualities. A person may not have much love, compassion, or wisdom, but by engaging in love, compassion, or study, the imprints of these positive qualities increase in the ground consciousness. If there were only six consciousnesses, then thoughts would arise and cease without anything left to increase or develop, such as the good qualities to reach Buddhahood. The increase of these positive qualities occurs only because positive tendencies are planted in the ground consciousness. Otherwise, they don't go anywhere. So the strength, if you want the merit, the strength or the force of bodhicitta, number one, the strength and force of excellent qualities is what gives rise to how our consciousness, our aware consciousness, will react and develop and express itself under certain conditions. So that's what we must change. And that's the question you ask. You have to do it here. You have to do it here. Everything you do in the day must be devoted towards, if you want, seeding the ground consciousness, so that whether it's tomorrow or in the afternoon or the next week, how the display of your activities comes out will be a reflection of those wholesome activities. The ground consciousness is the foundation and location for the mind, because all karmic latencies are stored in the ground consciousness. A momentary visual consciousness instantly ceases when the next appears and does not occur again. Instead, a new momentary visual consciousness appears. Similarly, a mental consciousness is created and ceases instantly. Sometimes a mental consciousness does not appear at all. However, the latencies for the arising of these consciousnesses are contained within the ground consciousness. Thus, we can remember a visual perception that occurred in the past, and remembering it strengthens the latency. So whether you want to call it the brain, whether you want to call it the mind, it doesn't really matter what you call it. We know this happens, and they studied this for thousands of years experientially. It is the case. So what you seed into your consciousness is what will come back out. And one of the ways we can really see how deep it's going is to do with our dreams. Our daydreaming, where our daydreaming goes, of course you want to end daydreaming, but where our daydreaming goes and our nighttime dreaming goes and its quality is very much to do with the deepest latencies. Yeah, not all dreams. And of course speech will reveal it as well. The ground consciousness is very important for our practice of the Dharma. If we do not maintain mindfulness and awareness, our disturbing emotions gradually increase from day to day, from lifetime to lifetime. However, if we develop mindfulness and awareness, and it means excellent mindfulness and awareness of the 37 factors of enlightenment with bodhicitta, I'll just add that in because that's what he's talking about, will gradually improve due to the latencies being established in the ground consciousness. For example, when we begin to practice, there may not be much love and compassion in our meditation, But if we persist and meditate on love and compassion through the gradual accumulation of the latencies of love and compassion in the ground conscious, we will gradually progress to a point where our meditation will have vast love and compassion. It's causal. So then you may ask the question, well, I feel that I'm a loving being. I feel I'm a compassionate being. You may, but how deep and far is it going? So it's the quality and the capacity, and it may not be what you think it is. So this is why the practices of sadhana are very important. They feel like hard work, but like a gymnasium, until you do them enough, it feels like a struggle. Eventually, it becomes easy. It becomes very natural and very relaxed. You have to be challenged. You have to go further and further. In terms of dharma practice, the ground consciousness is very important because through meditation, our mind overcomes negativity and develops positive imprints. We can witness the effects of latencies in our daily life. And he talks about children and others and adults who have both positive and negative characteristics that come out apparently quite naturally. So I'll move on. I was going to summarize, but I'll move on for a little bit here. Page 55, number 21 from the third Kamapa. As it creates everything and is the ground from which all seeds sprout, it is described as the causal condition. However, because it is eliminated, when the seventh consciousnesses are negated, it is also called the conditional consciousness. So the commentary says, all the karmic seeds, good or bad, within the ground consciousness sprout and manifest as the other seven consciousnesses, as if the ground consciousness were the ocean and the other seven consciousness were waves that appear upon its surface. So this sounds very Freudian. It sounds very psychoanalytic. Yes, it does. Very true. We see the waves. We don't experience the ocean. So when we meditate very deeply, we have enough time to put on our scuba gear. First of all, we need to get into our wetsuit or our dry suit. We need to get our PADI or our NAWI license and get trained. That's Dharma teaching. And then one day when we're ready, we get all suited up with our scuba gear in meditation retreat or in meditation. We put on our regulator to our mouth. And we're in the chop. I think maybe some of you who scuba dive know what that's like. And there's choppy waves and you're getting water into your mouth. And one day we have the training to put in the regulator, expel air from our BCD. I hope all of you know what I'm talking about here. And go down. We go down, everything changes. We get out of the chop, we get out of the surface material, we get into the experience of the latent movements of the ocean and what's going on in the depths of the ocean. So unless we do that, we're experiencing the chop of the waves thinking that that is life. All this that's displayed is the only thing we know about our experience in life. But it's not the entirety of the ocean. We want to get down to the empty, luminous light of the ocean, which is the empty nature of the eighth consciousness, not just the latent dispositions, which is Mahamudra. So what we experience as appearing in our minds is waves of chop that feels like outer experiences. Many people, many of you out there, I can see by your names and so on and faces, you've experienced this. You've experienced the complete fading away and vanishing of mental and physical experience and then wondering what that is. That's actually because they're just appearances. The ground consciousness is responsible for all illusory appearances, but it is not the basis of Buddhahood, which is freedom from delusion. This is why the eighth consciousness is a consciousness and not a wisdom. Very profound. We have to see the empty nature of the latent dispositions, which is Dzogchen and Mahamudra. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. And turn to page 62. The transformation of the ground consciousness. Rangdrung Dorje, Third Karmapa says, number 22, this ground consciousness, which is the identity of everything external and internal. Isn't that an extraordinary statement? Sounds a bit like modern quantum physics. Depending on your point of view, the entity or the experience exists or does not exist, is alive or dead. This is actually being tested in the laboratories exactly at the same time. There's an experiment running in Australia, in Austria, and one in Germany, I believe, to see if something as big as a virus can be in two places at once, two locations and two different states at the same time as a quantum entity. It's the observer that makes it. As soon as it's observed, it goes one way or the other. But when it's not, and you don't interact with it, it exists in two or more states at any given time. This is being tested. It works for atoms and electrons and molecules. So this group is trying to scale it up for a small virus or small bacteria. They say they're very close to doing it. It's quite extraordinary. This ground consciousness, which is the identity of everything external and internal, is the source of everything that should be eliminated. It has been taught that it will be overcome by the Vajra Samadhi. So now the commentary. As mentioned before, Rangdrung Dorje uses a Mahamudra view of the ground consciousness, which is a little different from how it is traditionally presented by the Chittamatrans, who held that the ground consciousness is truly existent and the source of samsara and nirvana, different in Mahamudra. Anyways, I'm going to skip a few lines there, but suffice to say, in Mahamudra, the view of Mahamudra is that in fact, the ground consciousness, or the eighth consciousness, the Alaya consciousness, is actually empty in nature. It is the foundation from which all the delusions of samsara appear, that is, as a storehouse containing all the latencies of samsaric appearance. This is very important for the view and the practices of Dzogchen and Mahamudra. And you may understand why now. Is if you take the view that this eighth storehouse is real, then you're really not seeing its nature. From the point of view of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, it's actually empty. That means that all afflictive states, all wholesome states, all everything that appears is in fact the empty in nature, empty and luminous. So this is the way in which we practice, the attitude in which we practice of Mahamudra and Dzogchen. This suggests that the ground consciousness is the foundation for samsara, but not for nirvana, from the Mahamudra point of view. When the ground consciousness is eliminated by the Vajra Samadhi, with Vajra meaning something which is indestructible, and Samadhi meaning meditation, or the continuum meditation, unbroken, it is transformed into the wisdoms and is no longer the ground consciousness. So this is the explanation from the point of view of Mahamudra masters and Dzogchen masters, is that when there is a Vajra-like Samadhi, between the 10th stage of a bodhisattva and full Buddhahood, that samadhi actually transforms the ground, which is empty and luminous in nature, into, therefore, the it empties it out, and therefore arises the five wisdoms, especially the Dharma Dhatu wisdom. Back to the commentary. So the nature of the ground consciousness is delusion, not the true nature of reality, like the Chittamatrans said. When Buddhahood or Arahatship is attained, and that means, it's a bit odd there. I don't think that's ever been resolved, but yes, Arahat is attained, which would be equivalent with bodhicitta, would be equivalent to the sixth stage of a bodhisattva. The ground consciousness ends. I would place that really at full Buddhahood, but who am I to speak about that? The ground consciousness is the true identity of external phenomena. I would write this down. It's really, really utterly profound, and it's such an amazing degree of insight, of vipassana, and meditative ability. The ground consciousness is the true identity of external phenomena, such as mountains, and the internal phenomena, such as thoughts. This is because the ground consciousness is the source of all the illusory appearances of samsara. Although its nature is neutral, and it does not impede liberation in itself, it's the source of everything that has to be eliminated. So, one has to get to the ground and change the seeds of the ground. Therefore, we have the seed-like samadhis. We have the seed syllables, we have the mantra wheels, we have the vajra body of our appearance that we meditate on as a Buddha. So if one stays in one's form as we know it, as we've grown up in our form, in our speech, and in our mind, and we purify it to goodness, we actually don't purify it into the ground consciousness. That's the basis for Vajrayana. Because in fact, when the ground consciousness is revealed as the five wisdoms, that is the realm, if you wish, of the Sambhogakaya, Dharmakaya, Nirmanakaya for full Buddhahood, the display of full Buddhahood. So that is why the sadhana practices of Vajrayana operate at three different levels. They operate at Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana to take care of all three levels, if you wish, of view and disposition. But certainly working, a lot of the sadhana practice is going for the elimination, the full elimination, the drying up, if you wish, of the eighth consciousness. I'm just going to take a look at the schedule here. Okay, a few more minutes. So I hope you got that. I'll repeat that because it is so important and it is so much of Dharma and it's so beautifully condensed. Again, on the top of page 63, the ground consciousness is the true identity of external phenomena, such as mountains, and the internal phenomena, such as thoughts. That's the very basis for the practices of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, just so you know. This is like the heart of a Mahamudra Dzogchen text. All these practices and these high practices of Trecho and Mahamudra practices are to see that, in fact, the internal and external phenomena are none other, first of all, as transformations of the five skandhas, but then it really is the latent dispositions, the ground, appearing to our mind, where we think That's the television set out there. There might be something out there. But in fact, the experience is to do with latent dispositions. And we can actually give, as I think I've said this 5 or 6 times over the last number of classes, if you reflect back to the number of times you and your partner or your spouse, you and a close friend, you and others, even ones that you don't know, saw so-called reality completely differently at a board meeting, in a therapy session, because I'm looking at some of you who are therapists, in a therapy session, anytime. Because we look similar, we think people are having similar thoughts and similar concepts about life. Not so. Not so. That is to do with, we are deluded that way. That is to do with the ground consciousness creating a world. But some of it seems very similar. Number 23, when the ground consciousness, this is a section on mirror-like wisdom. So hold on to your hats, because this is a real jump in a elegantly beautiful way. 23, when the ground consciousness with its obscurations is negated or taken away, is eliminated, or I prefer to use the word dried up, or comes to an end. At that time, there will be the mirror wisdom. All wisdoms appear in it without the concept of mine. It is uncircumscribed and eternally possessed. It realizes all that is to be known without being directed towards them. It's described as the Dharmakaya because it is the foundation for all the wisdoms. It's the center of the mandala, if you wish. The first wisdom is the mirror-like wisdom, which is the wisdom of the Dharmakaya. The 8 consciousnesses are transformed into the 5 wisdoms when a person is about to become a Buddha. At this boundary, there is a final trace of the ground consciousness left that is eliminated by the Vajra-like samadhi, and Buddhahood is achieved, transforming the ground consciousness into mirror-like wisdom. And by the way, Trangu Rinpoche gives from the commentaries and from greatly awakened beings, he gives a feeling for what that would be like. Since mirror-like wisdom itself is free from delusions, it sees the delusions, experiences, aspirations, and interests of others as clearly as if they were reflected in a mirror. Ordinarily, we can see only what is in front of us, but mirror-like wisdom enables us to see everything in all directions without any mistakes at all, and it leads to great understanding because all aspects are seen so clearly. Some of the great biographies, even in the outer biographies of some of the great saints like Shabkar and Longchenpa and one of the famous Lingpas, I forget which one, but in a number of great biographies, these experiences of the mirror-like consciousness and being able to experience clearly in all dimensions and various beings' predispositions in their minds, absolutely clearly, it's like looking in a clear mirror and seeing it, but without any movement, without any latent tendencies to obscure, are described. from the clarity or luminosity of the ground consciousness. You see, whenever there is knowing aspect of any phenomena, there is this luminosity. That's what gives the luminosity. The luminosity of compassion is the skill and means of awareness knowing objects. That's where it starts. So that's what it means. From the clarity or luminosity of the ground consciousness, external phenomena seem to be really there. Because you hear it, it's really there, right? But we're not hearing anything. We're just hearing our minds. You know, this could be wood. You know that, right? This could just be a hunk of wood. Sounds like wood. It is wood. But it's got lips moving, so you say, ah, look, it looks like a human. Must be a human talking. It's kind of like Data in Star Trek. You know, they make his face, they must cover his face from every episode. It's just plastered with zinc oxide. You know, it looks like he's been out in the sun, going out on the beach to be irradiated in the strongest ultraviolet. So they've got his face completely white, right? But they wouldn't have to. They could just make him look ordinary. You couldn't tell the difference. See? So they make it a little bit android. We should try that sometime. Wouldn't that be creepy? Wouldn't that be creepy? Just completely cover your face and your hands in zinc oxide and put in some contact lenses that are a little bit funny, just a little bit different than a human eyeball, just iris, a little bit different. Put on contact lenses and then speak a little bit odd, like, well, that's not so binary. And then all of a sudden, huh! So, as long as it's okay, it feels about right. Phenomena seem to be really there as if they were external objects. The ground consciousness also gives rise to internal phenomena of our mind being seen as the self, resulting in the development of mind poisons, such as attachment and anger. All these phenomena that come from the ground consciousness appear very vividly to us. You know, if I could make a recommendation, I'd like to. On the bottom of page 63, that last paragraph, which continues to page 64, I would take that out and write that out by hand. It's at the heart of everything we do in meditation practice and Dharma practice. So it's the heart of all of our Mahamudra and Dzogchen practices. All these phenomena, all these experiences that come from the ground consciousness appear very vividly to us. When the ground consciousness has been transformed into mirror-like wisdom, there aren't any more clear or vivid delusions or appearances of samsara. Clarity becomes this mirror-like wisdom. We may wonder if the elimination of the ground conscious results in an emptiness such as a vacuum of empty space or nothingness. But since it isn't like that, this state is described as a mirror in which a reflection appears vividly without any sense of self, self of other or self of one, both. So not just you. No self nature can be found in the so-called outer or inner. It's all the same nature. It's phenomena appearing like it would appear in a mirror. Same. This is, of course, the third stage of Mahamudra, the practice of the third stage of Mahamudra. It appears vividly without any sense of self. There is no grasping at the thought of I or me. How could there be? So as some homework, I would like you to try to grasp to the images in a mirror. And you will see this. Try it. Just try it. Try to hold on to the images in a mirror. You can't do it. There's no possible way. But the mind creates the delusion. The awareness creates the delusion that you can. it can't be done. Not even for a millisecond. So grasping, with this kind of awareness, grasping is impossible. Why? Because grasping is empty of any nature. A wisdom may be permanent or changing. For example, the wisdom of all accomplishing actions undergoes changes depending on the needs of sentient beings, whereas the mirror-like wisdom is changeless, continuously present, and permanent like the ground consciousness. Anything, whether beneficial or harmful, will appear to the mirror-like wisdom clearly, continuously, and impartially, without any distinctions between self or other. So it's a very important point. The other four wisdoms, the other four Buddha wisdoms, are keep changing and displaying depending on the needs of confused beings. Whereas the mirror-like wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu is changeless. It's just the nature of way the universes are ours. How's that for English? Universe is ours. So I'll leave it there today. I would really strongly advise reading these sections that I've just read out, especially 65 and 64. It is at the heart of all the practices that we do, and why they're so powerful, and why they lead so far, because we're actually purifying the ground, not just the purifying the habitual sense consciousnesses and the seventh consciousness. We want to go for the ground, for the latent, the real deep latent dispositions.